Good morning, my friends, and welcome to the program. I, hopefully by now, have bagged the biggest bull elk of my life. Or, at the very least, that's what we're shooting for. What follows is a replay of my latest interview with U.S. Representative Harriet Hegeman. I get her thoughts on the whole Kevin McCarthy situation in Washington, D.C., and what she thinks about everything that's happening in Israel. I'll be back on Saturday's Weekend Update. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to another incredible installment of the program. From very high above, all the puerile and vacuous forms of Wyoming mainstream media, this is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, firmly ensconced behind the silver Cowboy State Politics microphone and broadcasting to you from the base of the Bighorns. At the Cowboy State Politics Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to the program. In a moment, we'll hear from United States Congresswoman Harriet Hegeman. I caught up with her yesterday in the midst of her doing several different interviews. Interestingly enough, I talked to her before she went on the Sean Hannity radio program. Sorry, Sean, as far as Congresswoman Hegeman goes, I'll always get top billing. Okay, maybe not, but at least I can say that this time. Anyway, she's got a lot to say, and I'll bring that to you in just a second. But we begin this morning with the Pravda on the Platte. In an article inconspicuously titled, Biden Confirms Hostages, the Pravda on the Platte printed this little paragraph, and I quote, Meanwhile, Israeli warplanes hammered the Gaza Strip neighborhood by neighborhood Tuesday, reducing buildings to rubble and sending people scrambling to find safety in the tiny, sealed-off territory. End quote. The very next paragraph reads, quote, Humanitarian groups pleaded for the creation of corridors to get aid into Gaza and warned that hospitals overwhelmed with wounded people were running out of supplies. Israel stopped entry of food, fuel, and medicines into Gaza, and the sole remaining access from Egypt shut down Tuesday after airstrikes hit near the border crossing. End quote. What the Pravda doesn't do here is provide any sort of context. We shouldn't really expect them to, because they never do that anyway. Allow me to do their work for them. The Gaza Strip is roughly the size of Washington, D.C. Since the United Nations acknowledged Palestinian independence in 1988, and by the way, that's not as significant as it sounds. The United Nations is a corrupt organization that is inherently anti-Semitic. But since the UN acknowledged the Palestinians in 1988, year over year, thousands of rockets are fired from Gaza into Israel. This latest attack was over 4,400 rockets. Now just take a second and think about that. Over 4,000 rockets fired from an area roughly the size of Washington, D.C. into Israel. Now, Israel is about 8,600 square miles. To give you some perspective, that's roughly the same size as the state of Vermont. Just a little bit more comparison, the state of Wyoming is 97,000 square miles. So, geographically, we're talking about areas that are very, very compact. And in other words, out of every square mile of the Gaza Strip, 32 rockets were fired. So please, somebody tell me which part of that little territory do you leave untouched? And the Pravda on the Platte is advocating that we open up the Gaza Strip and let people in and out. I don't think so. Shocking though it may seem, by Monday, the Palestinians were calling for a truce. Yeah, I'm sure. Once they launch 4,400 rockets, and then they realize what's about to happen to them, then they want to talk peace. Frankly, we're way past that. Undoubtedly, there are innocent Palestinians mixed up in this whole thing too. But forgive me if I don't have a lot of sympathy. when you choose to live in an area the size of Washington, D.C., from which 31 rockets were fired from every single square mile in that territory, then you might just deserve what you get. All choices have consequences. Oh, but I forget, Israel is an apartheid state and they oppress the Palestinians. That is a load of bullcrap. Israel is a free society, not that much different than our own. The Al-Aqsa Mosque is right beside the Western Wall, the holiest site in all of Judaism. So please tell me, how discriminatory are the Israelis? They're not. And anybody who argues any differently is just lying to you. Frankly, my friends, war is a messy business. And if you're among the group of people that wants to be declared an independent country, when you fire 4,400 rockets into the neighboring country, that is an act of war. You don't get to kill thousands of people and then claim that you're the ones that are oppressed. You get to go to war with one of the most powerful countries in the Middle East. That's all you receive, and it's exactly what you deserve. All 68 square miles of the little Gaza Strip. Pardon me if I'm a little short of sympathy this morning. Then we have the whole Speaker of the House race. As I told you before on the program, I think that Kevin McCarthy needed to go. No doubt, the timing was terrible on it. But in my not-so-humble opinion, Kevin McCarthy definitely had it coming. There was the debt ceiling fight. I can't for the life of me figure out why we have to continually raise the debt ceiling when we could, I don't know, stop spending. And then there was the continuing resolution. Continue business as usual. As you'll hear in just a few moments, Congresswoman Hageman and I kind of disagree on this little point. Although, she does point out that it's time to move on and select a new speaker. Browsing through the news this morning, Fox News, Breitbart, The Blaze, there's all sorts of questions as to why the Palestinians chose last weekend, of all weekends, to launch their attack. You don't suppose that the chaos in the United States had anything to do with it? That we have an absolutely inept president who doesn't know what kind of pudding he had for lunch? You don't think that that played into it at all, do you? Or that that president has nearly completely depleted our strategic oil reserve? I'm sure that didn't have anything to do with it. Or that that same president has turned the United States military into a woke mob? I'm positive that that didn't have any effect on their decision whatsoever. And then there's the 6 billion pound jackass in the room. Of course, I'm referring to the $6 billion that the Biden administration released to Iran. Breitbart News is reporting this morning that the White House refuses to freeze Iran's $6 billion. From the article, and I quote, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan refused on Tuesday to commit to freezing the $6 billion of Iranian funds that the United States unfroze before Hamas attacked Israel. Quote, you just laid out all the ways that Iran is complicit and facilitated it. Is that reason enough to refreeze the $6 billion that the United States helped unlock for them? A reporter asked Sullivan during a press conference. Listen to Sullivan's reply. Quote, we have not yet had a dollar of that $6 billion spent, and I'll leave it at that. End quote. Do they think we're stupid? Every single person that has ever had a job, that has ever been paid for anything, knows that money is fungible. What that means is if you know that you have a windfall coming, that you can spend money that you had devoted elsewhere, that eventually you'll be able to cover the difference. So what Iran did is they know that they have $6 billion coming. It could be for infrastructure or medicine or hospitals or schools or whatever, doesn't really matter. They're going to take the money they had devoted to those projects and spend it on missiles. Missiles to be fired into Israel. Stevie Wonder could have seen what was going to happen there. Iran is the world's chief sponsor of terrorism. Every single American citizen should be absolutely outraged that we might be behind the attack on Israel. Okay, not directly. But we freed up the cash for Iran to do it. In other words, we may not be responsible for what the convict did after he escaped, but if we're the ones that unlocked the cell, then we're absolutely responsible for everything that happens afterwards. It's absolutely disgraceful. Before I have to go get another soapbox out of the closet, let's get a word in from our sponsors. We'll get back to the program in just a second. But first, an absolutely obscene profit timeout. Cowboy State Politics is brought to you by Morton Buildings. I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but that white crap is about to be flying around, and you have left all of your shiny playthings out to be covered up with a giant snowbank. Now, you could have prevented all of this by simply calling Nick and Jesse from Morton Buildings. Their phone number is 307-674-2532. They are the experts in metal building construction. They've been doing it longer than anybody else, and they definitely do a much better job than anyone else. So if it doesn't matter if you need a garage or a barn, or maybe you want a big roping arena so you can practice all that rodeo stuff next month when all that stuff is flying around. Or if you need a giant warehouse for your business, the two guys you should be talking to are Nick and Jesse from Morton Buildings. Again, their phone number is 307-674-2532, or you can check them out on their website at mortonbuildings.com. My friends, it's Wednesday. You know what that means, don't you? Gun of the Week time from Gunrunner Auctions. The gun of the week is lot number 23. It's a 45 long Colt SAA. This single-action Army revolver is a third generation. It's brand new in the box, and it's never been fired, and it's completely unturned. It has a 5.5-inch barrel with a blue-colored case, fixed sights, and it's got those checkered eagle grips with the rampant Colt on them. It includes a hard blue case with the correct end label. This is a beautiful pistol for any collection. And it can be yours. It's lot number 23 at GunrunnerAuctions.com. Coming tomorrow, Cowboy State Politics Live will broadcast the first show on the Independence Network. It's going to start at 9 a.m. and continue all the way till 11. All you have to do is go to the website independencenetwork.us and you can listen to the entire afternoon. It's a great lineup that's going to start with my show, and then it'll be Just Blame Joey, and after that, Representative Ken Pendergraft has another show planned for you. So don't miss all the great content coming from the Independence Network, and it all starts tomorrow. Again, the website is independencenetwork.us. Also, this Saturday, the Sheridan County GOP is hosting their annual Reagan Day dinner. It's always a really classy affair, and this year, the keynote speaker is none other than Representative Harriet Hageman. And just for you, I've got two free tickets to give away. To win them, all you have to do is send me an email to the address david@cowboystatepolitics.com. The first two people to shoot me an email get the tickets. Again, the address to send it to is david@cowboystatepolitics.com. And now, back to the program. Yesterday, I got Representative Hageman to carve out 15 minutes to do an interview with Cowboy State Politics. She's a super busy lady right now and had a number of media appearances yesterday. Like I told you at the beginning of the broadcast, right after my show, she was on the Sean Hannity radio program. Here's what she had to say. Joining me on the phone is United States Representative Harriet Hageman. Harriet, welcome back to Cowboy State Politics.
David, it's good to be with you. It's been quite a while. I've missed our discussions.
Well, I know. If you weren't so busy in D.C., we could talk more often.
It's been kind of a crazy year, but a good one in a lot of ways. Right now, we're going through some disruption. Sometimes disruption is good. I'm going to be optimistic and positive and believe that when we come out on the other end tomorrow or the next day, we're going to be in a better place.
Well, I certainly hope so. And, you know, our time is limited, so I've got a couple, just four real quick questions. And the first thing I want to do is play a piece of audio from an interview you and I did back in January. And it's the piece where you're telling everybody why you voted for Kevin McCarthy. So let me play that, and then I've got a question for you. So here it is.
Okay. And I have been voting for Kevin McCarthy because the alternative is we've had three choices throughout this process, that it was either going to be Kevin McCarthy, Hakeem Jeffries, or a coalition speaker that would be picked by the most liberal members of the on the Republican side and the Democrats. And though the last two scenarios were absolutely unacceptable to me.
Okay, given that, You've been pretty supportive of Kevin McCarthy from the very beginning. So what's your take on the whole motion to vacate?
Well, I think what happened over the weekend demonstrates that it is critically important that Republicans have a voice in Washington, D.C. And right now, our voice has largely been silenced because of the fact that we don't have a speaker in place. The world can move awfully quickly, and we need to be thinking about those things when we make the kind of decisions that were made last Tuesday evening. Kevin McCarthy has been a good speaker. Do he and I agree with politically on everything? No. Are there people who don't like Kevin McCarthy because they think that he's too liberal or he's too this or that? Yes, and I understand that. But the reality is that I'm just going to give you a quick rundown of how of the types of things that we've been able to do since January with Kevin McCarthy as the speaker.
Please do.
We passed H.R. 2, which is the strongest border security bill in Congress's history. We passed H.R. 1, which is the very best energy security bill that has ever been passed out of Congress. We passed H.R. 5, which is the Parents' Bill of Rights, putting the rights of the parents ahead of schools and other federal and government institutions that are trying to intervene between parents and their children. We have been able to bring amendments to the floor for the first time in decades. In fact, 2 weeks ago, when we were working on two appropriations bills, we did 450 amendments on the floor. We were on the floor until 4 o'clock in the morning debating amendments, meaning that it's been an entirely open process. We have returned to regular order. What I'm saying is that Kevin McCarthy kept the promises that he made in January. He never promised an outcome. He has no ability to promise an outcome. Nobody can promise an outcome in this place, but they can promise a process, and they can promise that they will try, and that's what he did. Again, I know that there are people who don't like Kevin McCarthy, don't think he was the best person for the job, but he was the only one we had in January. And over the last 9 months, he has worked to implement a conservative agenda that has been voted on and supported by the Republican conference. So with that said, again, I know that there are people who were critical that I voted to support him again last week, but we are in a situation right now that I think has borne out that you have to be awfully careful of what you wish for, because you just might get it. Now, with that said, I'm also looking ahead. We have two great candidates for speaker. We have Jim Jordan and we have Steve Scalise. We are going to be meeting tonight. I'm hoping that we will get on the floor tomorrow and be able to vote for and move forward with a new speaker. I have endorsed Jim Jordan. I think either of the men would be excellent. I have supported Jim Jordan, and I can tell you why I have publicly endorsed him. But the fact is, we are where we are. It's time to move forward. And I'm not going to look backwards, but I am going to say I will defend my vote on supporting Kevin McCarthy in January. And I will defend my decision to support him last week as well. But again, it's time to move on.
I agree. And for me, there were two big oopses. And, you know, we only hear part of the story through the media, which, weird. But the two big problems I think I had with Kevin McCarthy was the continuing resolution and then the debt ceiling debate. And I think, you know, I've heard from a lot of different people in Wyoming that, you know, that they pretty much have the same opinion.
I will comment on the debt increase, the debt ceiling increase. That one I was not pleased with. As far as the continuing resolution, here's what you need to understand, or your listeners need to understand, is the day before, we had a phenomenal bill that came to the floor. It cut non-defense spending by 30%. It had an across-the-board 8% decrease in spending. It provided permanent border security, and it kept our government open. And there were a few people in the Republican conference and the Democrats who killed that bill. So once that bill was killed, that was the bill we were taking to the Senate the next day. That was what the plan was. And when they banded together and killed that bill, we were left almost with no choice if we were going to keep the government open. And one of the things since I've been back here, David, is shutting down the government is a catastrophic event. because it takes such an enormous amount, number one, to bring it back up. Number two, it really impacts our ability to accomplish anything. So if you come back here to actually pursue an agenda or policies, if you want to proceed with appropriations bills, you can only do so if the government is open. So it creates a horrible, catastrophic failure in Washington, D.C. at a time that we can't afford that. So I ultimately voted against it. But the bill that came on the floor the day before was a phenomenal bill. But the same people who went after Kevin McCarthy are the ones that killed it.
Okay. So this time around, last I heard, you were supporting Jim Jordan. Could you just quickly tell us why?
I have been able to work with him on the Judiciary and Weaponization Committees. He's a truly solid conservative, and he's a very effective leader. He's one of the first people who came out and supported me in my campaign running for Congress. He's been an incredible warrior for years. I mean, Jim Jordan has truly been the face of the conservative movement in Congress for a long time. And you know that, David.
Yep.
You've watched him just as I have. I know that he is ready and absolutely ready and willing to fight on this issue of defending our borders and getting border security in place. I was with him when we did H.R. 2, which is the border security bill. We started debating that bill at 10 o'clock in the morning, finished about 4 o'clock the next morning. He was there with us the entire time. He was right in the fight and right in the middle. He understands the bill in and out. I'm still hopeful that at some point we can move forward with H.R. 2. It's sitting in the Senate right now, but that we can get that kind of border security in place. He's been one of them who's been willing to go after the weaponization of the federal government and expose the incredible violations of our First Amendment rights, our Fourth Amendment rights, our Fifth Amendment rights, and has just been absolutely dogged in going after people like Lina Khan, Christopher Wray, Mayorkas, Merrick Garland. So he's somebody who understands where Washington, D.C. is broken and what Congress needs to do to fix it. So that's why I decided to endorse Jim Jordan last week.
I've liked Jim Jordan for, well, ever since he got into Congress. I mean, he's just a bulldog, and I think that he would make a great speaker. What do you think his chances are?
I think they're quite good. We're looking at numbers. They're in terms of who have already endorsed him. I believe that he has, as of the last count that I saw, which has been a couple of hours, but the last count that I saw, I think that there are more members who have been willing to come out and publicly endorse him. At the same time, you know, one of the reasons that I think people look at the Republican Party and look at Republicans in general and say, you guys are in disarray and you can't ever get anything done. Republicans, by our very nature, are independent. We do not walk in lockstep. We do not have people on high dictate to us what we do. That's why we're Republicans. Democrats, their leadership walks in, tells them what they're going to do, and they all do exactly what they're told to do because that's what their mindset is. They don't believe in freedom and liberty. They don't believe in free thought the way that we do. So our conference gets a little messier than the Democrats do. And everybody just needs to understand that's one of the fundamental differences between a Democrat and a Republican, a liberal and a conservative. And so, you know, I think we're going to have some more family discussions tonight, and hopefully we will come to the consensus of the person that we can walk on the floor with tomorrow. We will all support that person. We'll have hopefully we'll have a speaker in place by tomorrow afternoon. That's my hope. That's what I'm going to work for and engage in the discussion tonight about. I think it's important for us to come together because I think we as a country need to really come together in light of what's going on the international stage. What happened in Israel is absolutely barbaric. We cannot tolerate this kind of behavior ever again. The women and children who have been slaughtered and attacked and raped and kidnapped, the men who've been, all of the stuff that has been going on in Israel and in the Middle East tells you that we have got to get our things together here in the United States. We've got to get back on track. We've got to get back on track financially and policy-wise. We need to all grow up, and we need to be doing what is in the best interest of our country, and we need to get some stability and certainty back in the world.
Yeah, that the thing in Israel, I mean, I'd say it's about time that Israel handled that problem. But secondly, there were people that you and I both know, Wyoming citizens that were in Israel when Hamas attacked. I mean, it's a barbaric move. And, you know, I guess the last question, since we've got just a couple of minutes, how should the United States respond to this? What should we do? Should we be involved? Should we you know, just support him? What should we do?
Well, we're going to be involved because they're our number one ally in the Middle East. But what we can't do is start doing what the UN is already doing, which is trying to get Israel to back down. Israel is going to have to take care of the situation for whatever is in the best interest of Israel. After we saw the barbarism yesterday, one of the things that has struck me about this is this was simply killing for killing's sake. This was raping for raping's sake. This was kidnapping for kidnapping's sake. This was about a level of hatred that you and I could not even possibly understand in our heart. And we cannot have, again, that kind of instability, either in the Middle East or anywhere in the world. One of the things that we all have to recognize is watching the videos of the military-age men from all over the world crossing our border unmolested and without being stopped in any way should frighten every single person in this country that the same kind of situation could happen, at least in a localized manner here, because we don't know who's coming across that border. We don't know what kinds of things they intend to do. So again, that's why we need to have the Republican leadership back here in Washington, D.C., so that there's at least one faction of the government that has some level of common sense. What do we need to do? We need to make sure that Israel has the resources they need, but we also need to start pushing back already on organizations like the UN, who want to claim that there is a moral equivalency between Hamas and the IDF or Israel. There is no moral equivalency.
No.
There is no moral equivalency, and we cannot tolerate anybody who says that there is.
Well, before our conversation started, I was just flipping through Twitter, looking at all the pictures from protests in New York. Harriet, there are people flashing Nazi flags down in New York. I mean, we're dealing with people that, frankly, like you said, most of us don't and can't understand.
That's right. We need to make sure that those types of activities do not visit our shores. And to do that, it is incredibly important that you have a strong United States. I was interviewed a couple of times after what happened on Saturday. And the point that I keep making and have been making for quite some time is that a weak United States makes for a very scary world. It makes for a very unstable world. A solid United States, a strong United States, provides the moral authority and the stability that we need. And what we're seeing is that the Biden administration has been such a failure, both domestically and internationally, that we're seeing movements and we're seeing activities and we're seeing things that you and I never thought that we would see in our lifetimes. And they're coming back from, you know, this is the type of behavior that happened hundreds, if not thousands of years ago. And it's being brought back in 1923 as a form of warfare. I never in my lifetime imagined that I would see the kind of barbarism that we are seeing coming out of Israel right now. And it is because we have a very weak United States, because we have a non-existent president who's suffering from severe dementia. And he has put people in positions of power who are simply incapable of handling the job before them.
Well, Harriet, our time is up. Thank you very much for taking the time to visit with me. I know you've got a very busy schedule. Hopefully, we'll see you soon. And thanks again.
Thank you, David. Hope to see you soon as well.
All right. Have a good day. Bye. We're probably not going to have a decision on the Speaker of the House race today. Maybe not even tomorrow. Remember, when Kevin McCarthy was elected to the Speaker's chair, it took over 15 votes and it took several days. But none of this is unusual. In American history, there have been speakers' races where it took over 90 votes to get a speaker. So even though the media is going to freak out, don't be concerned. It's nothing all that unusual. And remember what Representative Hageman said, that because we're Republicans, things tend to work a little bit messier than they do with the Democrats. Because we're free and independent thinkers, we value freedom and liberty, the Democrats don't. They march in lockstep with whatever they're told to do. Whatever happens, we'll all get caught up on Friday's live program on the Independence Network. To listen to that, go to the website independencenetwork.us. I'll also have a brand new episode of Weekend Update for you on Saturday. But for now, from the base of the Bighorns, at the Cowboys State Politics Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming, I'm David Iverson, and this is the one and only Cowboy State Politics.